Welcome back to another episode of Silk Flowers and
Paper Mache Hearts. We're your hosts, Eric Hart
and Ashley Flowers. Today we will be talking about the ideal prop shop and what we love about it.
Yeah, so I thought we could start off because you just relocated for the summer to a brand new prop shop, for you at least.
Yes.
Where are you working?
At the Old Globe Theater in San Diego.
You have a lot of thoughts about comparing the Yale prop shop to the Old Globe prop shop, huh?
Yeah, it's very interesting because I think both prop shops are great in its own way. The Yale prop shop, we share the big tools like the bandsaw and the panel saw and the table saw and all that stuff with the same shop. So we don't have that in our own shop. However, in the Old Globe, we do. So we have our own bandsaw. We have our own table saw.
Right.
However, it's in a lot more of a smaller space. So not a lot of people can work in there at the same time. At Yale, the scene shop is quite large.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a very different and interesting aspect of the two. And then I think the bigger difference between the Old Globe Theater and the Yale Repertory Theater prop shops is that the Old Globe has a beautiful spray booth.
Oh, great.
It's gorgeous. You uh-huh. could fit a Mini Cooper in there.
Mm-hmm.
It's perfection.
Right.
At Yale, we don't have a spray booth at all, so...
Oh, no.
I'm very jealous of that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm just like, I just want that back.
Yeah.
The Old Globe, the workspace is quite minimal, and there really isn't an inside room for work tables. We kind of, do a little bit on the table saw at the very end, which... I don't like, in case, somebody needs to use the table saw, you have all your crap everywhere and you got to move it real quickly. So that cuts in time with your project, yada, yada, yada. So what they do is they have work tables outside.
Yeah.
Which works for them because it's beautiful here and I haven't seen it rain once.
Right. It's 86 degrees every single day.
Yeah, so you're working outside. You're like, oh, I guess I'll work on my tan as well as I'm working.
Right.
But thankfully, in the prop shop at Yale, we do have space. We have three work tables, which is very nice to have. So those are, I think, the biggest differences between the shops. We both have offices. One's a little bit larger at the Old Globe. We don't have as many people in the office as we do at Yale. It's just practically Jen and I working, and then once in a while an intern working in research or something for their project. I think those are the main differences there. Another difference I would say is not the physicality of the shops. It would be how large the prop staff is. For Yale, it's me, my boss, and our craftsmen. And then if we're lucky, we have an intern or two. At the Old Globe, there's the props master, the assistant, a shopper,
right.
A main craftsman, a main carpenter, a couple artisans, and then they overhire more artisans during the summer. So it's quite a large prop shop, but it's definitely smaller than Yale. So it's very interesting working in that kind of environment. But yeah, it's very fascinating how, smaller space, you figure it out. You still do the job. If you're lucky to have a larger space, great. That's a perk. I feel that props people always manage to find a way to make things work no matter what they're given.
Right. You figure it out. A lot of prop shops tend to be like one or two kind of people.
Mm-hmm.
It's only at places like Santa Fe Opera, which has, 8 prop carpenters and 10 prop artisans plus 2 or 3 prop painters. So they have their own, prop carpentry shop.
Mm-hmm.
Like at Yale, where you have your table saw, bandsaw, sanders, and then, a full artisan shop. And then like the Public Theater has, I think, 3 full-time people and a number of overhire. And since they're basically on the other side of the building, down a flight of stairs from the scene shop, they do the same thing they have their own table saw, bandsaw, woodworking tools in the same room. And at least when I was there, it was similar in that they use the table saw table as a work table sometimes because there's not enough room for everything else. And then you just kind of spill out. directly outside the shop is the Newman Theater, which is where A Chorus Line first went on, and Bloody Bloody Andrew Jackson and Hamilton. And so you're setting up sawhorses in the wings of that theater when they're not doing a show there, which is very rare because they're always doing shows there. So yeah, just trying to find that space is always tricky. The worst is places where they don't have a prop shop and you have to kind of set up in the hall, you know, you're like on the ground or something and you have maybe... You could set down some cardboard boxes so you're not cutting the floor when you're using your X-Acto knife or things like that. But so yeah, all these different prop shops we've worked in, we were kind of thinking about like what would make a perfect prop shop, because everybody has their opinions, everybody has their dream of like the perfect prop shop. I usually like to think of it, you know, you want different rooms, and it sort of breaks down into having a dirty room, clean room, and then what I call a wet room. Your dirty room is where you make your dust. That's your woodworking if you're doing furniture or anything else like that. I tend to use wood in a lot of things, even if it's not furniture. I don't know about you, but I'm kind of always running to a table saw or a bandsaw to cut something or another. And you're always sanding things and all that. So you're raising dust and you want to kind of keep that all separate.
Yeah. And I think it's very important to have that room, because I know there's been times where I'm upholstering a couch and somebody next to me is painting or sanding, and you're like, I trust this person, they're not going to spill anything. But there's that fear of if they spill one dot, I'm screwed and I'm going to have to fix it. And who knows how many steps back that was. And it's a bit nerve-wracking, but it's also very rare to have.
Yeah. Or if you have to lay down a piece of fabric to hem a curtain or something, and every work surface has a fine layer of dust on it, you know, and you can't lay it down anywhere. Or you have to, like, I don't know, put down plastic sheeting just to do fabric or something like that. It's tough. Or even, like, paper props or something like that. You don't want the dust going on. So, yeah. A clean room, a place to have all of your fabrics stay pristine and no dust or anything. Fabric, paper props, any of that sort of thing. And painting too, but I kind of thought, I like a wet room, and that's where you would have your wet paint. And that's where you do like your molding and casting and things like that. Because again, you don't want to mix that with your dirty room, because you're getting sawdust on a wet paint surface or sawdust in your molding and casting stuff. And at the same time, you know, you're doing like, oh, you're mixing silicone. And so you have wet silicone everywhere. And, you know, that stuff never dries unless it's mixed up. So you don't want to accidentally set down your, you know, recently finished chair on some wet silicone or that sort of thing. And plus, you know, you want your access to your sink and you want to be able to like just slough around your plaster and get it, you know, let it dry. And all the tables have that sort of crust built up over time because it's got all the glue and plaster and paint, you know, just building up. So yeah, that's at least my ideal prop shop, would have those separate rooms. And then I was just thinking too, you mentioned the office earlier too, and I guess that would be a fourth room almost, is your office for your computer work and your, you know, paper props and organizing and budgeting. I guess you could fit that in a clean room as well, but yeah, you kind of want the office, especially if you're at one of those shops where there's only AC in the office areas or something like that.
Yeah, I think it's really important to have that office space, because sometimes you just need to hide away, shut the door, and be like, I need to do receipts for 3 hours.
Right.
And just have nobody bother me. I don't want to hear the jigsaw going on. I want to just sit here.
Somebody wants to listen to a podcast or...
You know.
Or, yeah, you need to take a phone call and somebody's using a sewing machine, so even the clean room is too loud. So that's the ideal. Now, how about the tools? What are the tools you need?
There's so many. I feel that props people are so clever with using whatever they got, but it's so much easier if we have specific tools to help us out. I really love the scroll saw. It gets a lot of little details. It's pretty much, if you guys don't know, a mini bandsaw, really. It's good to get those fine little details. You can create circles without having that cut into the circle. We have one at Yale, but we just don't use it. It's hidden away in a cabinet. And oddly, we've never needed to use it. So I think it's one of those special tools that you might might need for a project or two that's detailed or there's so many other ways you could do it, you know, but I love that tool.
I mean, I don't think I've ever worked in a shop that had a scroll saw. So I never used one and I've never gotten used to using one. So I don't really miss it. I mean, there's definitely times I kind of wish I had one, but I'll... Like you said, it's that one or two times and you just figure out how to do it a different way.
Exactly.
So there are a lot of tools you could get, and I usually break it down by, you know, there's some tools that could do multiple things. So you kind of break it down to, is this the tool that you need to do this thing? Or is this just a tool that makes doing that thing easier and faster? So you kind of like, if you're just starting out, you could kind of build up with a couple basic tools, and then depending on the kinds of props you're doing, get more specialized tools.
Yeah.
And it really does depend on like what kind of props you're doing, because the prop shop for an opera house is going to be different than a prop shop for a children's theater, which is going to be different for somebody who's doing a bunch of like Eugene O'Neill plays and Tennessee William realistic plays versus a prop shop for musicals and things like that.
Yes, exactly. There was a prop shop I was working in that had so much glitter and confetti.
Oh, wow.
In their stock. And I'm thinking, you don't need all of this. And so I made the mistake of just throwing it out. You know, I kept maybe one bin of it.
Oh, no.
But I was like, nobody needs this much stuff. And then we did Mamma Mia. And they wanted, you know, confetti everywhere falling and glitter. And I was like, oh, crap. I just screwed up royally.
Right.
I've never worked with large musicals.
Yeah.
And I'm used to plays and new modern plays, older time plays. So I never even thought that that would be needed for anything unless, I don't know, Peter Pan.
Right.
Yeah, that was a fail on my part.
Yeah, at Triad Stage where I work now, I don't think I would ever gold leaf anything. We just don't do any shows where you need to gold leaf stuff, as opposed to the Santa Fe Opera where every show, everything is gold leafed.
Yeah, we do a lot of gold leafing at Yale, which is one of my favorite things to do. I could gold leaf for hours. It gets everywhere and it's a complete mess and you're covered with gold speckles.
Right.
It's really satisfying.
Well, if you have a clean room, then it's okay.
Exactly. You can just, you know, do it and be fine. I think obviously, you know, listeners are going to be not shocked by some of the tools that we're about to say, but obviously a drill gun is needed. I really think it's important to have a palm sander because you're not going to want to hand sand all those corners and round over things. It just
Will be very soft. I definitely, the palm sander I break out at the end of almost every project just to do every surface.
Yeah, and everybody knows you have to make everything actor safe. You know, I've heard people, if you can rub it against your cheek and not get a splinter, you'll be fine. But I'm like, that's not the safest way to go about that. So what I like to do is take maybe like a cotton ball or something that's fuzzy and just like rubbing it against a piece. And if it gets caught on something.
See if it catches anywhere.
Exactly. If it does, you know you need to sand it down more.
Yeah, I'm usually doing like hand testing it and you know, risking getting a splinter in my hand, but true. Better me than an actor, I guess. And as far as carpentry goes, because I come from a carpentry background, when I was setting up my own shop in my garage a few years ago, one of the first things I got was a table saw. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, if you're not sharing space with the scene shop and you need your own woodworking tools, I kind of feel like the table saw is one of the most versatile ones. And you know, other than doing curves, you could do almost anything on a table saw, you know, any sort of sheet goods. You could do plastics. You could do some aluminum and brass even. But you could, you know, I made a circle jig for the table saw so you could cut circles and you could cut grooves and slots and you could do angles and bevels, you know, depending on what kind of jigs you build. You could basically do anything. You could do cross-cutting. You don't even need a cross-cut saw if you just have a table saw. Mm. It gets a little tricky when you have like that 20-foot long piece of 1x4 and you have to cut it in half. But with enough time, it's possible.
See, that's funny because I don't really have a carpentry background. I mean, I can do it if I need to, but table saw, I'm like, I can make a straight cut. That's my skill right there.
Yeah.
But when it comes to curves, I'm all about the bandsaw. I love making curves, making circles without a jig. It's just very satisfying to me.
So yeah, a bandsaw or a jigsaw is kind of like, again, any sort of wood. Foam is really good on the bandsaw. You could, you know, cut really thick chunks of foam. Again, plastics, aluminum. There's even some bandsaws, if you run them slow enough, you could kind of do steel on them, but
yeah,
you could
I've
even get blades
that.
To do rubber and stuff like that.
Yeah, I've never used it for metal. I know you can, but I think there's a specific blade that you need for that.
Right, so if you're doing any of the soft metals, so metal, if you don't know, it's either ferrous or it's not, and steel and iron, stainless steel, those are all ferrous. And then your soft metals are like aluminum and brass. So those you could cut on a woodworking blade. It should have fine teeth, and you could look up and see how many teeth it should have. But if it's a fine toothed blade, then you could cut thin aluminum and brass. It's really loud. But you can do it.
So wear ear protection.
You know, the prop sizes of aluminum that you would be using, you know, not... If you're not like building a house using aluminum truss. But yeah, with a table saw and a jigsaw and a drill, you could replicate a wide variety of furniture and any sort of woodworking you're doing.
Now for smaller projects, say you're building the typical cake out of insulation foam, it's very important to have adhesives and obviously the foam. You can upholstery projects, you know, the upholstery foam. You're doing something that's hard, you want the insulation foam. And what do you use to make those stick together, you know?
Right.
There are, one of my favorites for insulation foam is H2O.
Mm-hmm.
It's a contact adhesive, so you put it on one side, you put it on the other side of the two pieces you want to put together. You let it pretty much dry. And then you stick it together, bam, it's happy, it's stuck. It ain't coming apart. It's lovely. Now, if you're like me, I get very impatient. This is such a flaw for me. I'll do it, and I'll come back 5 minutes, and I'm like, I just want to put it together. So I put it together, and it doesn't stick. And then you start thinking, why isn't it sticking? What did I do? And then you're like, oh, I didn't wait long enough. So be patient, guys. Be patient.
Mm-hmm. And I think there's a similar glue a lot of people use called green glue. And I'm trying to remember what it is exactly. I think it's a 3M product. It's called like NF Fast Bond or something like that. But that's another water-based contact cement that's pretty good for your pink foam, your blue foam. I usually don't think far enough ahead to buy that because you usually have to like special order it or something.
Oh, yeah.
The hardware stores don't sell it. I end up using Gorilla Glue a lot for foam. One of the good things about it is it essentially turns into a foam, so it's a little harder than the regular foam, but you're still, when you're carving it down, you're carving foam. A lot of times with these glues, they create more like a skin or something that you have to kind of cut away as you carve into it. But, you know, if you listen back to our episode with Jen McClure, we absolutely hate Gorilla Glue. We hate when people use Gorilla Glue other than for foam. Foam to foam or foam to plywood. It's really good, too.
It's not
for furniture repair.
No. It is not welcomed in our shop. There's so many times we get... you know, chairs that the joints have loosened. So the students just threw some Gorilla Glue on it and it expands a bit. So it comes out.
Right.
And then it looks like crap. And so we have to chisel it away, which takes way too long. So we're wasting time. Yeah, we don't like it at Yale. It's a sin to use.
But so I think another kind of go-to glue that every prop shop should have a running supply of is epoxy, especially the 5-minute epoxy. This is,
yes.
Because if you want to talk about filling gaps, epoxy will fill gaps. I've actually used it. I mean, it's a little expensive for this, but you could actually like pour it into something to if you have two very loose fitting things. It essentially becomes like a big chunk of plastic, besides being very sticky. But yeah, like if you need a last minute repair, I mean, it's good for metal. It's good for wood. It's good for a lot of plastics. And again, like you fill it up, it'll kind of encapsulate something. So even something that doesn't necessarily stick to anything, if you kind of like drill a hole through it, you could kind of use the epoxy like a bolt almost where you have it on both sides. And it is pricey though.
Yeah, it does. It does get pretty pricey. Now, you mentioned it's also good for metal. Another one that I like to use for that is JB Weld.
Oh, yeah.
I find that very successful. It's a two-part, just like epoxy. And they also make, I believe it is of JB as well, a epoxy putty for metal. Yeah. And it comes in, you know, a little cylinder. It feels like a clay. The outer side is a light gray. The center is a dark gray. You chop a piece off that you need. You mix it together with your hands. Put it on where you want. Works perfectly, in my opinion. Yeah. I love it.
Yeah, I've never, going back to patience, I've never had the patience to use JB Weld. Because every time I break it out, it's like, how long does it take to cure? I think it's 24 hours or something. I think they have a faster formula, but it's still, you know, you're in this emergency and you need to glue these two pieces of metal together. And you're like, oh, you know, 8 hours. Where's the 5 minute epoxy?
Oh, another one. I just remembered Zappa Gap. Have you ever used that?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I used it. We especially used it when I was working on the shop that does the Christmas windows for Macy's and all that. Ton of just super glue and then Zappa Gap for like everything. Because it's really good for like small kind of stuff. So if you're gluing beads onto something or you're doing like very intricate kind of things, especially because the Zappa Gap essentially makes it like instantaneous. So you, you know, you position all these tiny things very precisely and you put your glue in, and when it's perfect, you just like spray it and it kind of freezes it all in place. So that's definitely handy. Cause usually if you don't use the Zappa Gap, you know, you're just using regular super glue, it's like, it never dries. I don't know what it is. It's like, it instantly bonds to your skin, but the thing you want to glue together stays wet forever. You gotta like wait for it to evaporate. But yeah, the Zappa Gap is pretty toxic though. Like the fumes, you definitely have to watch out for. That's definitely like wear a respirator, even if you're only doing a spritz of it at a time.
Yeah. Yeah. There are so many things that we work with on a daily basis that we really should be wearing a respirator, doing it in a ventilated area. And sadly, sometimes we don't know specific ones are like that. We're just like, oh, it's a little smelly, but we don't realize how toxic it is to our bodies.
Right, yeah. It's real. It's almost a full-time job just to stay up with all the different products and to see what you actually need.
Yeah. Also, guys, whenever you're using these adhesives, please wear gloves.
Yes, gloves.
I know a lot of people don't, but I'm such a big like safety advocate. And I'm like, no, use the gloves, use the eye protection when it's splashy and, you know, all that jazz. But I've noticed a lot of prop shops just don't. It's very sad.
Right.
So do that.
And I think we would be remiss if we don't mention, you know, the ultimate prop adhesive, which is hot glue. it's kind of the running joke that all a prop person needs is a hot glue gun. And it's certainly true that it is poorly used at times.
Yes.
But at other times, it is a perfectly acceptable adhesive. And you know, if you actually study hot glue, there are many, many different kinds. And you can find structural hot glues for metal-to-metal contact or things like that. They, of course, require special hot glue guns. But I use hot glue all the time. I mean, sometimes it's exactly what you need. And it's, again, like 5-minute epoxy. It's you know, you have a prop running out on stage and you need something attached right then and there, just, you know, hot glue it on mm-hmm. and it'll stay during the show. And then it's removable so that you could do a real fix after the show.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, besides that, you could kind of do castings with it. You could add it on top to do small, like, details. Mm-hmm. Some people, they'll do little, like, decorative appliques with hot glue, and then you spray paint over it and it looks like a piece of carved material.
Yeah, we like to use it a lot when we're making seals, wax seals yeah. for envelopes. It's just perfect. Mm-hmm. You put some glue down on some wax paper and you let it sit for a moment and stamp it with your wax stamper and paint right. it, and you're like done. Perfection.
Yeah. And you could use it like in a pinch to glue wires together for an electrics prop, because it's not conductive and it's waterproof, so it'll hold your wires together and keep you from getting zapped. This is of course for like low voltage stuff, but that's what we're doing in props. You're so not gonna true. You're not fixing the outside of your house, you know, the breaker yeah. box with hot glue, please.
Oh, also a fun fact, and I'm sure most of you guys know this little trick. I didn't know this until maybe a few years ago. Whenever you're hot gluing, have a little cup of cold water near you, because you're going to burn yourself. Let's be real. It always happens. Right. The moment yeah. that happens, stick your finger in it or wherever you got that burn, and it just magically makes things better.
Yeah. No, that's a great tip. And also, don't try to pull the hot glue off of you
oh, yeah,
with your other hand, because then you'll just have two burned hands. You yeah. basically have to like grit your teeth and wait for it to cool down before mm-hmm. you take it off your skin.
It's so true. It's so
Otherwise,
true.
You're just spreading hot adhesive all over yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can't even count how many hot glue scars I have. It's quite ridiculous. Okay, let's get back to tools. I feel we went on a little bit side.
I know, a little journey into adhesives. I mean, there's a lot.
Yeah, we could probably do a million episodes of just that.
I know, yeah. Well, if we're still in the carpentry shop, I know. One of the other early tools I bought was one of those belt and disc sanders.
Yeah.
The little combo things. You can never have too many sanding tools in the props shop. I mean, others are like an oscillating spindle sander. Basically, every like, you know, any sort of shape you could get your sandpaper in, you're going to eventually need it, you know, for inside curves, outside curves, making something flat, making something beveled, any mm-hmm. sort of like sanding tool, because you can almost, there's so many materials you use in shops where you don't even have to cut it. You could just kind of like sand it down into shape and get what you need.
Yeah, I like the disc sander. I've never yeah. been a fan of the belt sander.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if it's just because I know I can get whatever angle I need on the disc right. sander.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think that's just more of a personal preference, honestly. Nothing specific. Yeah.
Well, and it depends on, like, if you have a table set up for it. Because if you're able to lay your piece down and hit the belt sander at like exactly 90 degrees mm-hmm. and you know that's going to make it flat. You know, if you have a very long belt sander, you could get a very long surface completely flat without, you know, having to cut along the line exactly, that sort of thing.
Now, if you're doing furniture work in this carpentry realm, a great tool that I've learned at Yale is a pocket hole jig.
Yes.
They are great for joining the leg to the frame of a, let's say, a couch, a chair, a dining chair, anything of that sort. And it just angles it up. Oh my gosh, I can't describe this. I'm going to let you describe this.
If you don't know what a pocket hole is, you know, normally you think about screwing two pieces of wood together. You go in from the front and you screw it, and then you have the screw head is visible. So mm-hmm. a pocket hole is a very, very shallow angle going from behind. So the screw goes in from behind, and you can cover over the pocket hole, but often they're just positioned so that they're not visible from the front of the prop. And they're used a lot in furniture making, and they're actually semi period correct going back a good ways. You know, you could find 19th century furniture using pocket holes and that sort of thing. But it's actually, it's also a much, much stronger connection than screwing in from the front, because instead of screwing through the end of a piece of wood, you're screwing into the face of the other piece of wood, if that makes sense, and that's much stronger. So if I've actually, you know, you do like three pocket holes on a joint, and it's really tight and sturdy, even without glue. So you could actually like assemble a whole thing without glue and have it be perfectly sturdy. But yeah, it's like you keep all your screws hidden. You make these very strong joints. And if you have the jig, it's very, very fast. And I don't know about you, but I got the deluxe version of the jig that sets on the table rather than there's sort of like the individual one that you have to clamp on. It's like a single one. And then the one on the table has like three different, you can drill three holes into it. It's got its own clamp built in and it sets down. It's sort of like...
Yeah, I feel that we have both of those at Yale, which is nice because, you know, you get to explore which one you prefer.
I know, I've used the single one and it takes a lot more setup just to do a single hole, whereas with the little tabletop one, you could kind of like plow through a whole pile of wood and stick pocket holes all over the place. Assemble an entire piece of furniture just with pocket holes, and then you're buying the special pocket hole screws because you want to do it completely right. And, luckily, all that stuff I found is sold at Lowe's and Home Depot. You can buy it locally, so you're not, this isn't some weird fastening system like the domino biscuit joiner or whatever all those other clever little things are. But yeah, I'll do some like fancy joinery sometimes, but a lot of times it's just pocket holes. I usually don't have the time to like cut a mortise and tenon.
Yeah, and it's just
or annoying. Even to do dowels.
Yeah. I use dowels once in a while. I know our craftsman at Yale definitely uses dowels more than anything. And it's great. I just don't have the patience
for dowels. Yeah. There's times when it's appropriate for sure.
Exactly. Exactly. So I think we should move into the clean room and talk about, you know, talk about some stuff in there. My first thing, it's not a tool. It's just a thing that my boss and I talk about all the time. And I believe Oregon Shakes has this. Adjustable tables. They're this beautiful thing that you just crank it and it goes up so you can stand and work. Crank it again, it lowers down so you can sit and work. I don't know how I would react if we had one.
Right.
They're
yeah.
just so beautiful.
Yeah. Because sometimes you want your project to be at like face level and sometimes you want to be looking down at your project. No, I never even thought of getting one of those.
Yeah, we've been thinking, it's like, do we just build one? Do we just do it?
Yeah.
Because it just, it would be so perfect. Another thing that is great to have that is not a tool is AC.
Yeah.
If I had air conditioning in any shop that I've ever worked with, I would have been so much happier. Because it gets hot, it gets sticky, especially during the summer, and everybody's moving around, and you're working all the time. People get sweaty. It would just be very nice.
And there's some of your materials don't do well in heat. Well, there's a lot of adhesives. Mm-hmm. You don't want to get too hot. You don't want to get too humid. The AC cuts down on the humidity too. Yeah.
Especially with mold making. There's some molds that can't be in certain temperatures because they won't cure properly. And then you just wasted money, you wasted time, and you wasted material. And that's obviously a problem.
Yeah. And the opposite too, heat in your shop. I know I've worked places where there was no heat and trying to use adhesives and they just weren't curing because it's like 30 degrees in there.
Yeah.
Or 0 degrees Celsius if you're over in London.
Truth.
But yeah, tables in general, I want to go back to because working on the floor is not fun. And working on a small table is not good either. I think my table is a 4x8 table. It's kind of the standard. If you've ever worked in a scene shop, they, you know, plow out those 4x8 tables. They stick a bunch of casters on. It's got like 2x4. It's a full shelf along the bottom. Mm-hmm. And I kind of like that. I've added stuff to it, like a little vice clamp on the side, a power strip to plug stuff into so that that all moves with me. I've also worked on tables that had like downdraft, a bunch of holes drilled in it with a port for a vacuum cleaner. So basically you could sand and the table itself sucks all the sawdust down before it even gets into the air.
Oh, wow.
So that's really good. Just other sorts of vices and places to attach things to. Usually, the top is kind of semi disposable, so you could screw into it too, because in every other year or so you're going to just replace the top or glue stuff to it or staple stuff to it, any sort of thing. Usually just like some kind of solid wood top so you could staple stuff to it, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I like to use Homasoak because that's just easy to use.
Whenever you have to work at one of those shops where they got those cheap Walmart folding tables and you're trying to like bend some metal on top of it and it's just like shaking and the whole table's collapsing under it, it's like you want a good solid sturdy table for what you're doing. You don't want the table to move when you're working on a prop.
And when you're laying out fabric to cut, I like to pin it in to the table so I can get it very nice and tight and make straight cuts. And if you're on one of those white folding tables, that's not going to happen.
I think our big fabric table is, like you were saying, Homasoak. Mm-hmm. And then it's got, I think it's got a layer of batting and then fabric on top of that. So you could pin on it.
And speaking of fabric, it's so amazing to have access to a dye vat. And usually those are going to be in the costume shop. And usually they're allowing you to use it for any project. But there have been places where I've had to dye something and I just have, a large cooking pot and a heating element. And you're like, all right, well, this is going to be
fun. What's the largest Rubbermaid bin you could get?
Exactly. Yeah. Also, a washer and dryer. If you don't have one of those, and for some random reason the costume shop doesn't have one, or maybe you're freelancing in the city, which we'll talk about more in the next episode, you don't have access to a washer and dryer. I had to clean a quilt in my bathtub because I had no access to anything. My roommates were not happy. But you got to do what you got to do. You got to figure out a solution.
Yeah, I've been asking for years to have a sink where I could wash dishes that I pull out of stock.
Oh, yeah.
Because usually, we try to put them away clean, but just being stored, they sort of get dirty. And you can never trust if somebody rented something, it's still going to be clean. So before you give it to the actors, you want to wash it off. And it's like, I don't want to carry my delicate glasses out to the paint sink and wash them around all those chemicals and then try to find somewhere to dry where they're not going to get smashed. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to bring them into the bathroom.
Yeah, exactly.
Because people are eating off of them. And also the sinks in there are like super shallow and you can get maybe one plate in the sink at a time. So having a separate sink, you want your slop sink with like a good paint trap on it so that you're not washing all these like paints and chemicals down into the city sewer. But you also want your separate sink. And I think we were talking a bit about having a food prep area, which is separate from all these other rooms.
Yeah.
Because you don't want any of your food stuff, anything that's being eaten or anything that's being used in the process of being eaten, like your plates, to be, in the same vicinity as your contact cement.
Yeah, and it's nice in our theaters because we have two main theaters, University Theater and the Rep Theater. At the Rep Theater, the props runner has his own kitchen.
So that's great.
He can do everything over there. He doesn't even need to be in the shop for anything. And then when we are in the University Theater where our shops are, he does all the food prep in our office. So it's an enclosed area that's not getting all the dust and paint in. So we're very lucky in that aspect to have that because not a lot of places do.
Yeah, just a food prep area. And also, if you ever use ovens for craft reasons, if you want an oven for your food prep, but you want a completely separate oven for any sort of crafts, because once you put any sort of plastic in there. You know, you do your Sculpey clay, which is a PVC-based clay, or if you're doing some like thermoforming, you know, vacuforming, you can use your oven. Any of those PVC-based plastics, you know, they're going to off-gas when they're heated up. And, and that stuff essentially coats the inside of the oven, and it never goes away. So every time you turn it on after that, it's going to be having all this gas form around it. And you're basically going to be baking that into any food that you're cooking in there. So you just want to, you know, keep it separate. And but yeah, we have a craft oven, and I find I use it all the time. You want to, you know, you make a plaster mold and you could sort of crack it open and turn it down to low, so it's about like 100 degrees, and just kind of let your plaster mold toast in there for a bit to fully dry out. So, you know, you have this like 100-degree dry heat right there, rather than like, you know, it's the inside of the shop is humid and there's no air circulation, so your plaster is moist forever. Sorry, I just said moist.
You ruined the show. And on top of having a separate oven for food, it's important to have separate cooking pots and pans and measuring cups. I've seen a few shops that share, you know, a measuring cup with paint, or a pot with paint, or, because that's all they have. But you need to have potable items that are only for food. They're completely separate. They're labeled, because if they're not labeled, people are going to use them. So it's just important to have that. You know, you, it's all about making sure the actor is eating something safe, clean, fully cooked. And the only way to ensure that is by making sure everything you're using is only for food.
Yeah, right now I keep all of that in our, it's our break room. So it's it's where everybody goes to eat anyway. So it's, there's the set of the measuring cups and the plastic containers and the plastic cups, and you're not accidentally, you know, measuring out paint.
Exactly.
Measuring out some vegetable oil for the actor.
So I know we've been kind of bouncing around with a lot of ideas that we would like in our perfect prop shop. And one last thing before we sign off today is I want to talk about safety. And it's very important to me, and I'm sure many, many props masters out there, to have access to safety equipment in a prop shop. You need ear protection. You need eye protection. Anytime you're making a cut on a table saw, you need to make sure you have ears and eyes. Because if you don't, you're going to damage them. Wood could come off the piece of plywood you're cutting and hit you in the eye. You know, you could be just being like, oh, I'm just going to make one cut. I'm fine. But the high decibels of the sound of the table saw is quite high. And it's going to damage your ears after doing that for quite a few times. And always having a fume extractor nearby when you're dealing with chemicals that are quite minor, I find very important. And respirators. What we do at Yale is that we have a respirator fitting every single year to make sure it seals properly. You can't get anything in. No chemicals are coming in. And the reason we do it every year is because our faces are always changing. A lot of places don't realize that you need to have a properly fitted respirator. A lot of people are, oh, there's a respirator. Let me just throw it on. It's actually not doing you much good, because if it's not fitted properly, those chemicals can seep in.
Yeah, if you could smell anything while you're wearing a respirator, then it's not fitting correctly.
Exactly. And it's important to wear the correct respirator. There's one for chemicals, there's one for welding, and then you also see those little white masks that people wear, you know, when they're sick or something like that. Those are great for, you know, when you're sanding and stuff like that. It keeps the sawdust out.
And a lot of this is tough to sort of get across in just one episode, and without training as well. I know I've had a couple training sessions learning this stuff, and actually getting fit test properly by somebody who's trained to do fit testing is very helpful too. But one thing that's really important is that a lot of the dangers of the prop shop take years and years to kind of manifest themselves. So a common thing you see is somebody not wearing a respirator and they're like, oh, I feel fine. And it's like, it, you know, you feel fine now, But it's, you know, it's years or even decades of being exposed to this stuff where it starts to take a toll. So, you know, it's, there's definitely products out there, stains and polyurethanes for me too, where if I even get like a small sort of exposure to, I start feeling sick right away. And that was not true when I was in my 20s. And I was like, well, I don't need a respirator for this. I feel fine. So, if you actually want to make a career out of this, if you want to be doing this for 30, 40 years, you have to start doing the safety now, you know, because there's people out there who basically have to avoid entire types of products just because they've built up such adverse reaction to them because they weren't using the proper safety equipment to work with them.
Yeah.
And the same thing with ear protection, you know. Of course you can hear after you don't wear ear protection, but wait until you're in your 40s or 50s and you no longer pick up what's on the TV, or you can't hear what's going on at the meeting sort of thing.
What's really nice at Yale is we do a hearing test every year.
Oh, that's great.
Which I wish everybody would do that in addition to the respirator fitting. Because you can really see if your hearing's going down because you're not wearing ear protection.
Right, yeah.
You're probably going to be like, oh, maybe I should start doing that now.
Yeah.
You know, yes, we're artistic, we're crafty, we love what we do, but guys, safety, you got to do it. You're going to hate yourself in 20 years if you don't.
Yeah. And I keep my shop fully stocked with, like, everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, earmuffs, the little orange ear plug things, dust masks. Usually not respirators because they do need to be fitted and they're more personal items. Mm-hmm. But gloves, all that sort of stuff because, you know, even if it's another department, somebody comes down, they're like, I need gloves. It's like, well, I have some so you can use them. It's like, I don't want people to not be using safety gear because they don't have it at the moment and they just want to plow ahead. It's like just keeping that stock around, you know, or a guest comes in or an overhire and they're like, I don't have my own ear protection. It's like, well, here, you can use this. It's
now
like,
you do.
It's here. Let's, we don't have to stop work for you to be protected.
Exactly. Well, guys, we are out of time. I know we have covered a lot of information, a lot.
I know, and we could keep talking about this. We might revisit this in a different form in a future episode.
Yeah, I think we can definitely, you know, have some episodes on just safety and specific tools because, you know, the more knowledge, the better. All right, well, these are your hosts, Ashley Flowers.
And Eric Hart.
Thank you for listening in to Silk Flowers and
Paper Mache Hearts.
If you have questions or thoughts, feel free to email us at propspodcast@gmail.com. We also have a Twitter account at Silk Mache. So listen in and follow us there and get more information. And we also have an iTunes, correct?
Yeah. You can subscribe to us on iTunes or Google Play. And if you listen to us through any of those services, feel free to rate us and review us so we know how we're doing.
Also, guys, spread the word about the podcast because we want to educate as many people as we can.
Sounds good.
All right. See you guys next time.
All right. Bye.